So I got a confession to make, and I made it to Matt, and he agrees with everybody else who I grew up with, is I had this since I was a kid. Am I hearing like Lou Gehrig here, like an echo? Today. Okay. I swear I was hearing echo. But since I was a little kid, yeah, I'm hearing the echo, right? Okay, I'll ignore it. Huh? Okay. Ever since I was a little kid, I always wanted to be musical. It started when I was 7 years old, and I wanted to learn to play guitar. Down the block, about three blocks away from the apartment we lived in, was the YMCA. You go one direction, there it was. And there was this guy who was giving free guitar lessons. Well, someone gave me a guitar to use, and I would take my guitar in my case, and I would walk down to the Y for my free guitar lesson. And I made it through one or two lessons. And I practiced a lot. And about the third or fourth lesson, the guy giving the free lessons looked at me and said, you know, Marty, you're trying, but you're never going to play guitar because your hands are too small. So he said, okay, fine, whatever. So I trudged my way back home. Well, later in school, they were offering instruments called the flutophone, right? Which is now the recorder, right? When I was, it was the flutophone. It was a plastic, white, ugly thing that made this horrible sound. At least made a horrible sound when I played it. Maybe when Matt played it, probably sung like the angels, right? Well, I didn't last long in the flutophone band. And then the best thing that happened to me is I moved to Florida. A whole new beginning, a whole new chance to be the musician that I dreamed of being. And I went into band, and I wanted to play the trumpet. I have no idea why the trumpet, but it was cool looking, right? And I played the trumpet. And the best thing I can say about my band experience is I didn't get kicked out, right? I was never that good, but I wasn't always the worst. I was just average. And somewhere around my sophomore year, when I realized I could never be a musician and make beautiful music, I decided I had to become a fan of music. That's the best I could do. And so I became a musical fan, and today, I love music. I love listening to all kinds of music. And it wasn't until I accepted my call into ministry that I understood why music is so important to me. Because music is in my soul. Because music is spiritual. I have come to believe that all music, any music, is spiritual. The words may not be, but the music itself, it's spiritual. And so, if I was asked, Matt, what's the most spiritual music you know, you'd probably say the classic hymns, the classic symphonies, the classic music, Haydn and Handel and Mozart and Beethoven, right? That one too, right? If I was to ask Jim, who's over there playing, Jim Calvert, hey, Jim, what's the most spiritual music you know? And he would say the praise music that we play in Open Skies. If I was to ask some of you who are older, what's the most spiritual music? You'd open up the Cokesbury hymnal. And you'd sing, and he walks with me, and he talks with me, and he tells me I am his own. It is in my will that that song will not be played at my funeral. Just saying. But then if you were to ask me the most spiritual music, because of the music I like, I would probably say, well, it's just good old-fashioned rock and roll. Because it's spiritual. All of it. And it's powerful. and it has a message, and God uses it to move people. In the Bible, if you remember the stories, right, God used music to soothe the angry King Saul. He used music to lead Joshua's troops into battle. He used music to announce the birth of a newborn king. It was music. For God, music is powerful. I think sometimes that's what he uses to reach us. And as I thought about this, I begin to understand that there is no secular music. That I have come to believe that all music, in fact, I think everything is somehow spiritual if our eyes and our ears and our hearts and our minds are open to it. So I can listen to the radio now. And I can hear music, and I can find spiritual themes and biblical references in just about everyone. Not all. Like, if you were here Tuesday night, and you heard Matt do his thing about what music to do at your funeral, is anybody here for that? All right? You remember Matt said one of the more bizarre things he was asked to sing at a funeral went something like this.
Drop King me Jesus to the goalpost and fly. End over in neither left nor right.
Okay, so that may not be the best example of a spiritual song, but it is an example that will stay with you all day, that theme. But I will rescue you, I promise. So here's what I want you to do. There are music that you listen to, not KSBJ music, cheating, not Amazing Grace, cheating, music that you can listen to on your, on a radio, that is either spiritual or biblical themes, right? Here's what I want you to do. I want you to stand, and I want you to greet one another, and I want you to share with one another songs like that. Now, I'll give you one. Dust in the Wind is quoted right out of the book of Joel. Go ahead. Go ahead. Have a seat. Go ahead. So here's my question. Oh, see, this is my time. Would you turn this up now? Hello. There you go. Man, Matt told me don't do that with this group. And okay, so does anybody have one? Which one? What? I don't know that one. I know you're so vain. That would be Ecclesiastes. What now? Let the river run? Go ahead, sing it. Oh, honey, I can't either, and I try. Really? Okay, let the river run. Hey, mark that one. I want to listen to it. Give me another one. What? Turn, right out of the book of Ecclesiastes. The birds. Part of the... Like, yeah, the 60s. Yeah. Right? Yeah. What else? Give me another one. Give me old-time rock and roll, Bob Seger. Louis Armstrong, It's a Wonderful World. Anybody? Huh? What? Spell it. Oh, it's golden. I think that's somewhere in the Bible. I didn't know it was a song. Mark that down. I got to find that song. Jeremiah was a bullfrog. That's a stretch, but it's good. Who sang it? Three Dog Night. Good job. Yes, sir, in the back.
Living on a Prayer.
Bon Jovi. Wow, we haven't had that one today. Yes, ma'am.
Circle of Life.
Circle of Life. Lion King. Elton John. See, I'll play Name That Tune almost all day long. Yes, sir. Last one.
Rich
Bridge Over Troubled Water, Simon Garfunkel. Okay, I'm going to do one more because she's jumping up and down. Go ahead.
Time in the Bottle.
Time in the Bottle, Jim Croce. Died in a plane accident when I was in junior high school. Yes. Joy to the World. Three Dog Night. Yes, ma'am. You. Signs and Silence by Simon Garfunkel. And the last one right there. He's got the whole world in his hands. No one mentioned the Beatles. All You Need Is Love. Bum, 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 bum. Right? That's a gimme. Right? But there's one rock and roll song, which also happens to be the number two song on the Rolling Stones magazine, all-time 500 great songs. It's number two. It was written in 1965 by a British invasion band known as the Rolling Stones. That's before their drug days, maybe. And the story behind it is brilliant. Keith Richards, one of the lead guitar singers, he claims he was woken up in the middle of the night from a deep sleep. You make that what you want, right? And he woke up with a guitar riff and lyrics in his head. He had a reel-to-reel tape by his bed. He recorded it and then went back to sleep. And there's a true story. When he took the tape into the recording studio, you heard the guitar riff, you heard the lyrics, and then you heard Keith Richards snoring. No, seriously, Google it. And here's a song. See if you know this one. Okay, everybody now, ready? Okay, so, number two on the all-time list, but I'm here to say this morning that for the Apostle Paul, if he had an iPhone, if he had an iTunes account, right? This would be the most popular song in his account, on his playlist, because it's exactly what he told Timothy. Paul would agree with Mick and with Keith of what he sent Timothy when he wrote the letter that Leah read about, don't put your hope in finances, but trust in God, because he's the only thing that's going to give you satisfaction. And my sermon was supposed to follow that verse, that passage. Because after all, we have not recovered from the Harvey and the summer slump. Our giving is down. The offering is down. Finance committee is yelling at me to preach about giving, to preach about money. We need money. So this is the sermon. Ready? Hey, if you love your church and you want to keep it open, send money. Done. Happy, Rory? Because every time I try to use that passage out of Timothy, I always found my way going back to the passage we looked at last week out of Philippians chapter 4, verse 13, which says, I can do all things through him that strengthens me. And like I told you last week, that is one of the most popular verses today. You'll see it everywhere, right? Coffee mugs, t-shirts, key rings, and even under football players' eyes, right? But not only is it the most popular, it is also the most misunderstood, misinterpreted, misused verse in the Bible, I think. See, because when Tim Tebow wears it on his eyes, when students pray it before a test, they're asking for God's strength, which is fine, but it's not what Paul intended. You see, Paul did not write, I can do all things through him that strengthens me, in order to be a better football player, or in order to ace a test, or in order to get a promotion. To understand what he wrote, you have to look at the text in context. You can't just lift it out. Okay, so open your Bibles to Philippians 4, if you have a Bible with you. If not, it's on the screen behind me. I was very glad in the Lord, this is 4, chapter 10. I was very glad in the Lord because now, at last, you have shown concern for me again. Of course, you've always concerned, but now you had no way to show it. I'm not saying this because I need anything, for I have learned how to be content in any circumstance. I know the experience of being in need and of having more than enough. I've learned the secret to being content in any and every circumstance, whether full or hungry, or whether having plenty or being poor. I can do all things through the power of the one who gives me strength. Now, a little background. Paul was in prison when he wrote it. He had nothing. And he was writing a letter to his favorite church he founded, thanking them for money that he sent. And the money that they sent was necessary for his survival. First century, if you didn't get money sent to you, if you didn't have an account, more or less, you didn't eat when you were in prison. And so he's just thanking them. And then he puts that verse in, because it's a lesson he wants us to learn. And he says, I can do all things. And what he was talking about wasn't football or tests or jobs. What he was talking about was learning to be content. Learning to be satisfied with what you have where you are. And it was only by the fact that he learned to be content was he able to write those words. Only by being content could he write what we said last week. God's current provision for my life is enough. God's current provision for my life is enough. And so the word that we're going to learn used today is contentment. Last week was enough. And the problem is, when you read Paul, what did he say? He said, I have learned to be content, which tells me it doesn't come very natural. You have to learn it. See, contentment is something you learn. It's not something you buy. It's not something you have. It's not something you earn. You learn it. And if I'm going to give you words that will change your life, then I got to help you learn the same thing Paul learned. I have to learn the same thing Paul learned. And so I kept trying to figure out. He doesn't give us the secret, does he? He doesn't write a book that says 7 habits of highly contented people. He doesn't give you a step AB3. He just says, I've learned it, and I expect you to be there too. And it kept bothering me. I knew I couldn't preach the Timothy text because this is what I was supposed to do. And I kept staring at 4:13, kept staring at it. Put it up there, kept staring at it. I can do all things. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. And I started to say it differently, you know, just trying to figure out what is in there, the secret. And it finally hit me, right? When we say that verse, when we think of that verse, we usually think of the word strengthen. We think about strength. We emphasize the word strengthens me, right? That's what we do because that's what we're looking for. We're looking to be strong. We're looking for that strength to endure, that strength to make it through it, that strength to do whatever we're supposed to do. But that wasn't the key word for Paul, I don't think. See, I think for Paul, it was this word. I can do all things. Because you notice what Paul doesn't say? Paul nowhere says, I can have all things. Paul says, I can do all things. It's not money, it's not power, it's not prestige that empowered him, that strengthened him. It was his relationship with Jesus and what Jesus had called him to do. See, because I'm willing to bet, prior to his Damascus Road experience, Paul wasn't very content. I'm willing to bet that Paul didn't become content until he learned to live the life that Jesus was calling him to live. Because before, Paul was focusing on all the non-essential stuff rather than the stuff of the kingdom of God, the stuff that impacts eternity. And in doing so, when he focused on what he was supposed to focus on, what he was supposed to do, he found the strength to be content. He found the power to be satisfied. And while I haven't found this anywhere else, for me now, the secret of contentment is to let go of what you should have and grab hold of what you should do. It's a little different. You see, I can only speak for me. I don't want to speak for you guys. But I have found when I look back, when I am discontent, what am I focused on? I'm focused on me. What I have, what I don't have, what's happening to me. And you can't be content, at least I can't. Because when I focus on me, I see what I don't have, what I can't do, my situation. But Paul says, I can do all things. I can do, I gotta do, I gotta do. And when you're living like Jesus calls you to live, you know what that means? It means not focusing on you or on me, but focusing on the other person. That's what Paul says in the book to Philippians, second chapter. He writes this. He says something like, hey, when you're dealing with somebody else, think of them as being better than yourself. And then he says, have the same attitude that was in Christ Jesus, who gave up everything, became one of us, and suffered death, even death on a cross. To follow what Jesus says, greater love has no one than this, than to lay down his life for a friend. See, that's the do. And when you're focused on that, you're not looking at yourself. The most unhappy people I know are the people who only worry about themselves. In fact, when someone comes to me with a problem, a lot of times what I just say is, well, what are you doing? What are you doing for someone else? Because when you start doing for someone else, you're not focused on you. If a married couple comes and they're having marital problems, one of the first thing I ask them, because I'm not a marriage counselor, you know, my rule is I'll see you once or twice and I'm referring you. But here's one of my first questions. What are you doing for each other? Because if you're doing for the other person and not just yourself, your marriage is going to be a heck of a lot stronger than it is now. When you're living the words of Paul and you have the attitude of Jesus as being a slave and a servant, your marriage, your relationship is going to be better. So what are you doing for others? So let go of what you think you should have and grab hold of what you are called to do. We will have when we do. We will find fulfillment when we do. You want to be fulfilled? Then follow Matthew 25. Offer someone a cool drink of water who is thirsty. Feed the hungry. Clothe the naked. Visit the sick. Go to the imprisoned. Love the least, the last, and the lost. Then you'll find fulfillment. You want to find real joy? Right? Just talk to someone about the love of Jesus that he has for you. Yes, it's scary, but if you want joy, that's how you find it. Because you're not focused on you. You want purpose. The only way you're going to find purpose for your life, we talk about passion and mission statements. The only way you're going to find purpose for your life, really, and be content with where you are, is when you lay yourself open before God and say, God, here I am. Do with me what you want, and I will go where you send me. See, that's purpose. That's contentment. That's the secret. Oh, I wish I had 5 minutes to spend with Mick and Keith or with anyone who was discontent with their life, because I know exactly what I want to tell them. I would first quote to them, because I love the guy, St. Augustine, what he wrote in his Confessions when he said this. He said, "You have made us for yourself, O Lord, and our hearts are restless until they find rest in you." See, that's contentment. When you find rest in God, that's contentment. Or then I would quote the French philosopher Pascal, who said this. He said, "There is a God-shaped vacuum in the heart of each one of us which cannot be satisfied by any created thing, but only by God the Creator." See, that's satisfaction. And I would love if I had Mick and Keith in the room, because I always wanted to be a musician, right? I would love just to, I'd love to sing to them. I would love to sing a song out of the Book of Psalms, because it's a song that is all about contentment and satisfaction. And it goes something like this. "As the deer panteth for the water, so my song, soul longeth after thee, you alone." Are we going to sing it? So you're going to save me? Matt's going to save me. In fact, you guys are going to save me. Why don't we stand? And we're going to make this our prayer to God, because this is the secret to satisfaction. When this psalm becomes your theme, when you worry more about finding God, when you become a doer of the word and not just a hearer of the word, when you seek ye first Him, this is our song, this is our prayer.